Durant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
Curry with a drive. Blocked by Jackson. Bane, step back three. Bingo!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to your latest episode of the Core 4 Podcast. I'm your host, Xavier Dotson, and I'm here with my co-host, David Buckler and Matthew Gill. I know it's been a little minute. We got a lot of catching up to do. It should be a very fun episode. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Grizzlies free agency, summer league thoughts, and then as well, what are we going to do with the void in the three position? And we're going to talk about, like, what are the next hottest teams in the league? So, Dave, I know you was out there in Vegas earlier this month for the summer league. I know you saw a lot of stars, a lot of basketball nerds out there. How was just being out there in the summer league culture?
I always love it. It's my favorite few days of the year. It was different this year, though, guys, because of the Victor Wembanyama phenomenon. That Friday night we were there, and I had never been to a summer league game before that was sold out. And there was a real buzz. You know, the game before it also, if you remember, Jabari Smith at the game winner. And that was like the perfect, you know, lead-in then to the Wembanyama showcase there. But I got to tell you, I like the summer league better on a Wednesday when the building's half empty. You know, when it's just a little more relaxed and, you know, the beer line's a little shorter kind of thing. It was a little crazy there with all the hype surrounding Wembanyama, but always fun to go to the summer league. I tell anyone, you know, my friends here, you really should try to make it out there at some point. They run a really great event.
Yeah, I know it's a basketball nerd's dream to make it to a summer league event. I really want to scratch that off my bucket list. I know hopefully I got a long life to live, and I will fulfill that one day. Matt, I know that you've been busy lately. What's up with the did you catch a lot of the summer league action as well? Are you watching it wise?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I could, for sure. You got to catch the Grizzlies, obviously, for us. And then, you know, I was really excited about the top three guys. As Dave said, like, Victor is obviously a huge draw, but Goot, to me, I think is going to be a superstar in this league. So I was really excited to watch him. Obviously, he gets injured, but that Portland team still has a lot of exciting young guys. Brandon Miller and how he's going to fit in with Charlotte. Is he going to be a guy who day one of this season is going to be a contributor? Is he going to be a three-level scorer? You know, there was a lot of drama, not just with Victor, but the top three guys I thought were incredibly interesting. And then you have a litany of guys who are second-year players who are extremely exciting as well. You know, and the Grizzlies are full of them with their three guys that they had from last year. And, you know, going back to that Portland team, you know, I love that Shaedon Sharpe kid too. Like, I think him and Scoot are a backcourt that you can build around for years. And, you know, that's why I've pushed so hard that I think they should get rid of Dame. And I think they're loaded with talent. So, as Dave said, it's an awesome event to watch this year in particular. I thought was loaded with good players and good storylines. So I think it's part of it is the talent gets better every single year at the summer league, but also this year in particular had a lot to be intrigued about, to be excited about. And that just speaks to what Dave was saying. You know, you see sold out buildings on a Wednesday when typically that would be, as you said, Xavier, that would be the basketball nerds, you know, had that day reserved. But yeah, so I mean, it's been exciting, not just the games and the summer league itself. The whole NBA obviously has had a lot of storylines going on as well. So I'm happy to chop it up with you guys today for sure.
Yeah, and let me add one note about the summer league. I know that the games, quote unquote, don't count. We should take everything you see there with a grain of salt. There's been legendary stories, right? But guys that look fantastic at the summer league, and then they never have a real successful NBA career. So we all know that going in. But I think we've all watched enough basketball that you can kind of get a feel for some things. Guys that look a little out of place or look a step slow at the professional level, there are things you can gather. And one thing I've noticed in the years that I've gone, there's always one guy that stands out that the guy Hunter Tyson, really, really good in the games I saw. He averaged 20 a game in the summer league. And I didn't really have him on my radar for a guy from Memphis. I hadn't really looked at him much. I thought he looked great, maybe a late round steal. And there's always guys like that. I mean, I thought Benedict Mathurin last year really stood out, a guy I hadn't really seen much of. So I think there's guys every year that do start to kind of bubble to the surface to look. There's a lot of talent out there, but in the summer league, you can start to see the ones that may be a notch above what's even there in Vegas. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's plenty of talent out there in Vegas. Every year we see guys, each year that we don't know about. I mean, it's so many players in a collegiate level, you know, overseas now, and as well G League, that is just filled with talent, and they're going to surprise you. I know one guy with me was Keontae George. I mean, I feel like the Jazz made a huge deal with that one, that guy. So, I mean, you do catch a feeling for the guys that, you know, possibly can be a star or even a role player for that team coming into the league. But like you said, you got to take Summer League with a grain of salt because, I mean, I go back in 2011, I watched Josh Shelby. He played for us for the Grizzlies. He ended up being a Summer League MVP. Did he end up even doing anything for the Grizzlies? No, but and then again, you got, you know, Brandon Clark. He in 2019, he won Summer League MVP, and he's a great role player for the Grizzlies. But we're going to talk a little bit more about Summer League later on. I want to go to our first segment, which we're going to talk about free agency. So the Grizzlies really did not have a huge, big, exciting free agency. The one signing that they did have is they signed Derrick Rose to a two-year deal. And that basically solidified the only Grizzlies free agency move. Of course, he is beloved to the city of Memphis because of his collegiate accomplishments with the University of Memphis. He led the University of Memphis to an NCAA champ. I mean, not a championship, but to the finals game back in 2008. And he has huge ties here into the Memphis city of Memphis. Of course, last year, he did not play a lot. He only played 27 games with the Knicks. Matt, we know this isn't like a home run signing that a lot of people really wanted the Grizzlies to do, but obviously this has to mean a lot. So how do you feel about this signing of us acquiring Derrick Rose, and what can he bring to the Grizzlies?
I think it's what Dave talked about so much last season. I'm sure he'll say it again for sure, but just the veteran leadership, right? Like, he's a guy that's been around for a while now. He knows how to be a pro in this league. He's a pro's pro. Never really complained. Obviously, him and Tibbs have a good relationship, so I'm sure going into last season, they had those conversations about, like, what his role was going to be on that Knicks team last year. They bring in Jalen Brunson, who obviously, you know, when you're playing for Tibbs, you're going to play 40 minutes a night, and, you know, Jalen Brunson and Derrick Rose aren't really going to share the floor a whole lot, just, you know, that just puts you at a disadvantage defensively. So obviously Jalen Brunson gets the you know, the majority of those minutes, and then they have young guards and Grimes and Quickly as well that needed minutes. So there just wasn't really a role for Derrick Rose last year. You hope that, like, for the Grizzlies, that's a good thing, that saves some miles on what may be left in those legs. You know, we don't know. I don't expect him to be a huge contributor for this Memphis Grizzlies team. I think obviously at the beginning of the season, without Ja, I think that could definitely, you know, he could see some more time. I think as the season rolls along, though, I don't see him taking a ton of minutes. You just hope that the off the court addition of him is such a big plus, and that he can kind of guide Ja and some of those other young guys along and how to be a pro's pro and be a leader on the team for sure. But I go back, you know, you go back the year before, he was a big part of that Knicks team in the playoffs before they got Brunson. And it was kind of break glass in case of emergency when he got in there, but he looked fine. You know, he looked like he had been there before, as he has. And, you know, you never know as a Grizzlies fan, when we've seen Ja get banged up in the playoffs the last couple of years, that break glass in case of emergency option may have to come into play when you're in the postseason again this next year.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about how, of course, in the past few years when he was playing with the Knicks, that he was a break in case of emergency type player. I mean, I see him now as a guy that, like you said, like, if he plays a lot of minutes, then his body is going to wear and tear. And a lot of people feel like this. It's like, you know, Derrick Rose was Ja Morant before Ja Morant. And we have Derrick Rose. He was once a former MVP, a high, super hyper-athletic player such as Ja Morant. So, Dave, what do you feel that Ja Morant can learn from Derrick Rose in a way, especially, you know, as a – hopefully Derrick Rose will be able to mentor him and show him the ropes of being a great and a steady point guard in this league?
Well, Matt, I think he has me figured out, because the first thing I thought when I read about that was, I really hope Derrick Rose can help with the locker room chemistry. Same with Marcus Smart. Let's be honest. I think both of these acquisitions are aimed at improving the culture of the locker room. But the other thought I had, Xavier, was I hope Derrick Rose can play a few minutes. You know, I'm okay with his veteran leadership, but that's a position of need, especially early in the season with John Morant out. So I think we're going to need 10 to 12 minutes a night of quality point guard basketball from Derrick Rose. The contract certainly is workable and manageable, and it's a good deal. 2 years, the money's low. I think the other part of what Ja can learn from Derrick Rose is that you don't get forever in this league. He's a great what if, right? Because at one point, you take a step back, Derrick Rose looked like he was going to be a Hall of Fame player and was just spectacular until that knee injury. Nothing's promised in this league. Ja Morant is not promised a 15-year career in this league unless he starts taking care of his personal life and taking care of his body. And Derrick Rose is a shining example of you can go from being an MVP down to a role player pretty fast in the NBA. It's an unforgiving league with a lot, you know, I like the signing because I like Derrick Rose. And I like what you said about the connection to Memphis. But my thing really is Ja can learn an awful lot from him about on the court and off the court of being a professional player.
Yeah, a lot of people really just think that this is more of a sign-up for mentorship role for Ja Morant, a guy that's basically, we've seen Derrick Rose, he's battled adversity. You know, he's had constant knee injuries. He has to adjust his game. So we look at Ja Morant right now, of course, he's been battling with, you know, a lot of personal problems. And a lot of people, you know, counted out Derrick Rose as thought that he should not be in the league anymore, but he still has made a name of himself since his injury, being a quality point guard at one point, even when he came back with the Bulls. I don't know, a lot of people remember his 2015 run. They made it to the second round against Cleveland, and as well, he had a few moments with the Minnesota Timberwolves and what Matt was talking about with the Knicks. I'm just hoping that, you know, Ja Morant is willing to listen to Derrick Rose, because, you know, Derrick Rose is a guy, if you know about his background, he didn't come from, you know, a real nice neighborhood. He's from Chicago, or deep in Chicago. And maybe, you know, Ja Morant has a lot of people figuring, like, if Ja Morant want to live a certain type of lifestyle, will Derrick Rose put him in the right ropes? That's hopefully that Ja Morant listens. But as well, though, that was the only signing. It was another free agency move in a way in the front office. You know, the Grizzlies signed Anthony Carter to for an assistant coach. If you guys don't know who Anthony Carter was, he was a good long-term NBA player, played with the Denver Nuggets. His last coaching job was the development coach with the Miami Heat. If you want to know about some things, he developed Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Hassan Whiteside, all those undrafted guys about that. Matt, do you feel like this is a pretty decent pickup to have somebody that's, you know, that's played in the NBA and he has like a history of developing a lot of these untapped potential guys?
Maybe. I think it's really hard whenever you take guys away from really good like systems like that, though. Like, I don't think Anthony Carter is like solely responsible for that. The Miami Heat have an awesome just structure top to bottom. Now, that being said, there are a lot of guys who are similar backgrounds to like Max Strus's and, Gabe Vincent's and, you know, the list goes on and on, right? What was Hightower or what was that kid's name? That was Alex Highsmith. What was his name?
Yeah. Highsmith. I think, yeah.
I think it was Highsmith, whatever the case may be. He was not a great player, and then, you know, he ends up getting some run in the NBA Finals, right? So, like, yes, that's a great track record, but the Miami set guys up to succeed top to bottom. The whole organization is obviously one of the best in the entire league, but there's a lot of guys, you know, look at Zaire Williams from last year who we expected to have a huge leap and kind of fumbles and doesn't have a great season, obviously banged up with injuries and stuff like that, but that's a guy who, you know, you hope he can take under his wing and kind of coach along. And we see that jump that we kind of expected last year. There's guys that are on two-way deals. You have the Jake LaRavias, the Vince Williams, all these guys that are not going to be starters, not really going to be contributing this year, in our opinion. But you know, if things break right and there's enough injuries and they have to play, you hope that a guy like Carter, you know, can help guide those guys along and be ready for the big stage, right?
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, Anthony Carter, like I said, he sort of did. You talk about, like, the Heat culture in a way that they upbring their players. Of course, it wasn't just Anthony Carter himself making Max Strus into a, you know, a big contract player and Gabe Vincent into a big contract players, because, I mean, they received big contracts this upcoming, I mean, this offseason. But you look into it, though, like, this is a coach that played in the NBA. I mean, he played at least almost 12-plus seasons into the league. You got another guy that's, you know, that's a veteran on the coaching staff next to Taylor Jenkins, a player coach. And I mean, I feel like, yeah, like you were saying, Matt, that he can bring comfort in a way that Zaire and Laravia and Roddy wanted. At least he can at least untap one of their potentials. Do you feel that way, Dave?
I hope so, because I didn't see a whole lot of growth from some of these guys, you know, from year one to year two. I mean, Xavier, it's so depressing with Zaire Williams. I know we're going to get to this a little bit when we talk the starting three. And, I really hope that they are bringing this coach in. And really the whole coaching staff in general, I think, needs to reassess a bit some of the player development, because I didn't see as much growth with some of the young kids as we hoped. And I'm going to get into that when we get to the summer league too. I didn't see a whole lot of special. I'm a little concerned about the growth of these young kids, because remember, the NBA now, it's getting even more top heavy. Look what the Celtics just did with re-signing Jaylen Brown to this enormous contract. They got to pay. Oh my God. Who's their other star?
Jason Tatum,
right. So, like, these guys are going to make a combined, like, $120 million. They got Kristaps Porzingis, who's making a ton. So you got to fill in your roster with these guys. That's why they're trading all these second-round picks now. Second-round picks are becoming more valuable than ever, because you got to have depth and quality, but not really expensive depth and quality. And that really does get back to your point about coaching. And we do have, it looks like, a nice layer of players that could be contributors if they're coached right and given the right roles. And maybe this is what you're bringing this up for too, that, you know, Carter's coming from a good culture. Maybe he's a vital piece of that. I don't know enough about him yet. We'll see what his impact is.
Yeah, most certainly.
Jason Tatum. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. If I could add one thing though, but it just feels so much to me like when teams in the NFL get a guy from the Patriots who's been, like, really productive, but it's like, yeah, he did that in New England where he's got the best coach and they have a great front office and they have a great owner and all of these things. And when you're coming to Memphis right now where things are a little bit upside down, you know, things are not as certain, things are not as calm, things are not as basketball focused as they are in Miami all the time right now in Memphis. You know, I don't think we should be expecting this guy to, like, completely turn the season around for us. I don't think he's, like, a plus-10 win guy for us. And, you know, I hope that he can help with the young guys is the best-case scenario, in my opinion.
Yes, I think that goes for players, too. For example, Max Strus got 4 years, 62, to go from the Heat to the Cavs. Now, I like him, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him personally. But, you know, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and these guys were a really nice collective down in Miami. They had a really nice synergy as a team. So Strus gets 4 years and 62. Is he going to replicate and be as good a player for the Cavs? I don't really know. It doesn't always work that way, right? Guys can be really, really effective in the system they're in. And now he's going to go to Cleveland. I don't know. There's some, like, another great example. We should talk about Dylan Brooks, because we haven't talked about his contract yet with Houston. Good for Dylan Brooks to get paid. He's got a lot of money. It was a real head scratcher for me, guys, where he signed, because Houston doesn't seem like the kind of team that would be the perfect fit for him. I thought he'd be a great fit with a veteran team, maybe a Phoenix, maybe one of these other teams that could really use role playing from him. And he went to a young, immature Houston team. Didn't seem like a great fit to me. He doesn't bring that leadership, I don't believe. Can I get your thoughts on what that you thought about the Dylan Brooks signing in Houston?
Well, the reports were saying that he was more fed up of being the third and fourth role here with the Grizzlies. He wants to attempt more and more shots, and he feels like that he can be a number one or number two guy. And so him going down there to Houston, of course, you do have Jalen Green and you have Kevin Porter and Shingun. But they're extremely young, and he's somebody that's able to you know, he's been through sort of the ropes now. He's played in three years of playoffs, and I mean, he's an established defender. So going down there, he's able to get his money. They're not going to question him about his shots. So I know it doesn't make sense in the standpoint because he could be a great role player, but as well, guess what? He's still in the same division as us. He's able to see us four times out the year. Maybe he really wanted to see us and get revenge sparked with that. And then he's capable of getting his shots off.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. But I think Udoka will have some things to say if he's chucking up bad shots still. Like, Ime, we know from that year in Boston, is going to call out his guys, hold them accountable. And I you know, he's still going to be at best the number two behind Fred VanVleet, who also got a ton of money from the Rockets. And when you pay a guy that much, he's your number one option. Now, I think Jalen Green is already a better player, at least offensively, than Dylan Brooks as well. So that tells me Dylan Brooks is at least the third option in Houston. And so from that perspective, I don't get it, you know, from his side of things, but he obviously wanted to go somewhere else. I think the relationship had just become so fractured that he had to go somewhere else. And there just weren't a ton of teams that, like, were going to spend that type of money on him. Like, I just don't know that the market was that great for him. So, again, yeah, like Dave said, I'm glad he got his money and he got his bag and stuff, but I'm glad he didn't get it in Memphis.
Yeah. And by the way, guys, I think Seth Curry needs a new agent. Like, you know, you go looking at those free agent signings, and he got 2 years, $8 million from Dallas. Am I crazy? He's a really, really good high-level three-point shooter in a three-point shooting league. And you start looking at, like, Caris LeVert's getting $16 million a year. Kobe White's getting $12 million a year. God almighty, Bruce Brown's getting $22.5 million. And Seth Curry, every time I watch him play, is a really high-level NBA three-point shooter. You got $4 million a year for 2 years. I that was one – I know there's, you know, a lot of these free agent signings are a little crazy. DiVincenzo, the Knicks, is a lot of money. But I thought that was a weird one, sort of 2 years, $8
million. Yeah, I don't know. I have my own personal thoughts about, like, how they underpay some of these role players, and especially veterans, and they favor towards the younger guys. But, I mean, that's a deeper conversation about that. Okay, now we're going to swing along to our next segment. We're going to talk about the Grizzly Summer League, our thoughts about how the Grizzly young players play. The Grizzlies rookies and younger players broadcast their talents earlier this month in Vegas. Although the Grizzlies did not conquer the Summer League, some of their players showcased their skills for the next season. Dave, I know you was out there in Vegas, so you had great eyes on there. So tell me about your experience watching the Grizzlies, and what did you see from our younger players?
I didn't see a whole lot of special, like I mentioned earlier. I just didn't see. I'll tell you, we talk about this all the time in the Summer League. Take it with a grain of salt, like we mentioned earlier. But if you watch enough basketball, you know when you see something a little different, a little special, and nobody jumped off the page for me. I saw two games. I saw them lose to the Cavs and lose to the Clippers, and there was not a lot of energy in the building. And that worries me from guys. We had a pretty veteran summer league team compared to some other teams. And we had guys that were actually Memphis Grizzlies. You know, a lot of these other summer league teams are collecting guys last minute to fill up the roster. They're going to play in Greece. They're going to play in Israel. They're going to play, you know, they're not NBA players. We got guys on this team that are either two-way or Grizzly contracted players. Just wasn't a lot of special. LaRavia looks slow to me. Indecisive at times, but, you know, and I'll tell you this, if you go and take a step back from the Memphis media, I didn't hear one podcaster or read one article that said anybody on Memphis looked good. Like when they would do like the what's hot, what's not in summer league, or, you know, who stood out in summer league, Jabari Smith averaging over 30. No one said, boy, LaRavia really the scorching the Nets, or boy, no one could stop Lofton. You know, we like these guys. That's fine. But for their experience that they played at the NBA level last year, there was just not a lot of special at all. And now, someone pushed back on me on Twitter and said, well, yeah, you don't know, you know, the Summer League, and you saw the two worst games. Okay, fair. I'll tell you what I did see in a positive answer that was special in the Summer League. The one thing I saw for the Grizzlies that I think translates to somebody who could play finals minutes for us and be a big part, and that's Gigi Jackson, because of his size. He's not there yet. You know, young kid, right? So, but I'll tell you, I couldn't believe how big he is in person. You can't teach size. And the kid is a big kid. And when I can see him filling out, at times his shot looked awful. At times his shot looked really, really nice. But just in terms of his size, I was like, wow. You know, if he could be 2 years from now, our starting three and show some handle and, you know, hit some threes. That was the one piece of the summer league team I took a step back and said, yeah, that kid looks like he could be a player.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm very highly optimistic on GG Jackson. He was impressed me a lot, you know, only being 18 years old, youngest guy in his draft class, and then playing one season with South Carolina. But I do agree with you to an extent that it was a sort of a disappointing summer league. Matt, I'm going to swing things to you. Were you pretty disappointed how the Grizzlies played out there in Vegas?
I mean, you want to see them win some games, right? So, yeah, from that perspective. But I try not to get too high, too low on any of this. As we covered, there's a lot of guys who we thought were going to be awesome in the summer league. Anthony Bennett, one of the biggest busts in NBA history, had an awesome summer league. Trae Young, who love him or hate him, he puts up a lot of stats in the NBA, had one of the worst summer leagues of all time, and he's turned out to be an all right player, right? So I try not to get too high and low on this. I think GG Jackson is the story coming out of it for sure. And as Dave said, he had some great moments. I'm trying to pull it back up, but if memory serves me correctly, he only started the last game, I believe, and only put up 2 points. I think I have that right. So in his largest minutes, played, 25 minutes, 8 points. All right. So he had 8 points in that start against the Suns in the final game. You would like to see when you have a much bigger role that kind of the stats come up with it. Right. But so often in the NBA, we see that that's not the case. Now the positive is, like Xavier said, this is a super young kid. He reclassified at South Carolina. I think the Grizzlies got a steal drafting him where they did, because that team that he played for was god-awful in South Carolina. He was obviously the best player at 17 years old already, and he just didn't have, like, you know, the team around him that could kind of, like, support a good young star like that in college basketball. They didn't have the guard play to kind of support him and stuff like that. He was initiating a lot of their offense, so he has, like, good experience in that way from his 1 year in college. But to me, he's still going to be a long way away. And I think the ceiling for this kid is like an OG Anunoby, right? Who is somebody that the Grizzlies have obviously been linked to and talked about a lot, adding something to this Memphis Grizzlies roster, and a two-way guy who can hit three-point shots and defend at a high level. And that's kind of where I see him. As Dave said, though, it's not going to come this year. It's going to be 2 years, 3 years from now.
I mean, let me ask you this, though, guys. Again, if you watch enough basketball, how much did Scoot Henderson play in the summer league? One half, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got hurt.
Yeah.
He got hurt the first game in the third quarter, I think. And people raved about him watching one half of basketball.
Yeah, that's true.
He jumps off the screen. I saw that game that he played. In fact, I went to get a drink and I came back and all of a sudden he was hurt and the Thompson twin was hurt. And it's like, oh my God, you know, all of a sudden it went from the best summer league game in terms of talent. You'll ever see that Houston Portland game was unbelievable. Cam Whitmore looked good. You know, it was an unbelievable summer league game. And then all of a sudden they were out. But the point is, everyone's like, oh my God, Scoot's going to be amazing off of one half of summer league. He just looks different, moves different, was in total control. None of that from Lofton. None of that from Roddy. None of that from Laravia. They look fine. They just look like average NBA players. And maybe that's okay. But we had a summer league team with some you know, experience on it, and it would have liked to have seen a little more energy from the team. The two games I saw, it was a tough watch. It was a tough watch. And the other thing is they played Cleveland, and Sam Merrill, who was an ex-Grizzly, looked fantastic the whole summer league and led the Cavs to the summer league championship, but we basically just gave him away after he got an ankle injury. Wouldn't he look nice as our backup point guard? He's a nice player.
Yeah, that was the Sam Merrill revenge game. I'm pretty sure he had that one circle on this. I'll be honest. I mean, the guys that played last year for us, it was some games that they did show flashes. Obviously, one for me was, you know, Lofton do look like he's a guy that can be a rotational piece, at least for me. Obviously, most attention was on Laravia and Roddy because those were the two guys that were given the most opportunity with the Grizzlies this past season on the main roster. And Roddy really did pretty much disappoint me. He has no like move in which he can create his shot for himself. And I see him more as a four than a three now, in a way, because he at the three, he's just not fast enough and he's not shifty and creative enough. And like you were saying with Dave, that Laravia, he looks a little slow. That one, like when I said about Anthony Carter, hopefully he can come up with something like of a game plan. Okay, how we can get your shot off quicker, how we can get your footwork better. Because Laravia, it seems like he has some good shooting mechanics. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, it's something that's missing from him. It's something that's missing that can probably turn him from like a low quality role player to a great quality role player, or bring out even a bigger potential out of him. So I saw that. Now, Matt, I know, like you was talking about, we've been hyping up GG out of this, you know, summer league class. Was it anybody else that just like really caught your eye, or were you disappointed as well from the other main guys?
Well, I think Laravia to me started pretty slow first couple of games, but I thought he responded well to kind of the pressure that I felt was put on him by at least our small corner of the internet, right? Like, I feel like he was getting crushed on Twitter after those first couple summer league games in Utah, and I think he kind of acquitted himself well enough to me. Now, I think the other thing we got to do is put this in perspective of, like, what we expect from these guys in the NBA, because Jake Laravia and David Roddy, we are only expecting to be role players and maybe eight or nine guys in the rotation, whereas guys like Scoot Henderson, Amen Thompson, even maybe Cam Whitmore on that Rockets team as well, Brandon Miller, like those guys are expected to be stars and carry scoring loads, and they should jump off the screen a lot quicker because they are expected to be that. I think we all know from last year, I thought at least, as soon as the draft ended, I thought the Grizzlies got a bunch of guys with low ceilings and high floors, right? Like, I think that Laravia and Roddy in particular can be good rotation players. They're never going to be stars in this league. They're never going to be all-stars. They're going to, you know, they're going to have to really try to get some good second contracts, right, to stick around in this league. And I'm sure David Roddy will get re-signed just from what we've seen in the rookie year. I think they believe in him a lot, but you know, we don't expect Laravia or David Roddy to even give you 10 points in a playoff game. So, like, I wouldn't expect them to jump off the screen as much as some of those other guys, Dave. But, yeah, you would think with the experience, with the skill level that they have in their second year, that they would kind of show out a little bit more. But in the same time, I still really like the way that David Roddy moves up and down the floor. I think he fills the lane well in transition. We saw him kind of thrive in that. He didn't shoot the ball great, fine, whatever. Guys go through ups and downs shooting the ball in the NBA all the time, and I don't think we're going to ask him to shoot 10 threes a game. So, no, nobody else, like, really flashed or sparked for me from this Grizzlies team, but I think that's to be expected. I don't think any of these guys are superstars, so I wasn't shocked by any of it, to be honest.
Let me push back just slightly, and the reason it worries me, Matt, is because – we don't know what we're getting from Brandon Clark this year, and we don't know what we're getting from Zaire Williams this year.
Sure.
If those two guys were healthy and ready to go, then the roles for these other guys would be pushed down the bench a little bit. I wouldn't be as concerned. Achilles injuries are really, really tricky. Let's hope we see BC in January. Who knows what we're getting from Zaire Williams, and it's a real concern at this point. At least I'm not very confident at all about him. So without those two guys now, we need these guys to play well, and we need something from them. And I don't know if I see consistent NBA production from them. It's going to be very interesting. We talk about the coaching, it's going to be a fascinating first couple months of the season without Ja Morant, without those other two guys, like I said, to see what they can fill in and what we can patch together till we get to the second half of the season.
Yeah, most certainly. Okay, we're going to swing off to our third segment of the day, in which we're going to talk about as we was talking about earlier, of the three position that opening up, with Dillon Brooks leaving and signing with the Rockets, there's still a void and uncertainty for the three spot for the Grizzlies this upcoming season. With the Grizzlies roster set in stone and no trades in sight, the Grizzlies will have to look in-house and numerous young wings battling for the starting wing position. Is there one particular wing that stands out for you, Matt, that you want to be a starting three?
Not particularly, no. I want them to go to one extreme or the other, though. I either want them to go extremely small or extremely big. Like, I don't think it's out of the question that, like, Santi Aldama could play the three for you. But I would, in my personal preference, and, you know, obviously Santi would be a guy who puts you in kind of a jumbo lineup kind of set with Jaren and hopefully Steven Adams as well. But I think the best case scenario is that Luke Kennard sees a lot more minutes and you really just play three guards, right? You play Marcus Smart to start the season, at least. You play Marcus Smart, you play Desmond Bane, you play Luke Kennard all together. Usually the teams that do that and aren't successful with it is because they give up so much at the rebounding spot with that three. But when you have a guy like Steven Adams, who is the best rebounder in all of basketball, and you have Jaren Jackson, who's a seven-footer, who is extremely skilled and can be a high-level defender for you, like, I just think the structure is there behind them to where they could get by with playing three guards. And even when Ja comes back, I would still like for them to play with a similar style as well, you know, because defensively you have a guy in Jaren Jackson who can bail you out a lot at the rim, and you have a guy who can finish defensive possessions with the rebounding aspect in Steven Adams. So if there was one team in the NBA this year that's built to go, like, uber, uber small, I think it's the Memphis Grizzlies with those two big guys. But I don't know. I think that Taylor Jenkins, coming from the school of Bud, he's going to go to a guy that he really trusts. And I fear that it's going to be a guy like John Conchar over a guy like Luke Kennard, who I think gives you the highest ceiling but maybe lowers your floor a little bit. And I think he's just going to go with a guy that he trusts. And to me, those guys are in that Conchar, Roddy, and maybe Aldama kind of group of players on this roster, in my opinion. But I want to see spread it out, put Bane in one corner, put Luke in the other, and, you know, let's get Marcus Smart going downhill. Let's hit the pick and rolls with Adams and Jaren Jackson, and let's kick it out to the corners and jack up as many threes as we can. But I fear that Jenkins is very much stuck in his ways, and I don't see him doing something like that.
You mentioned – it's funny you mentioned John Conchar, because a report earlier this week from Bleacher Report that was going through all 30 teams predicting all the starting lineups. And for the Grizzlies, that had John Conchar being the starting three. And, you know, that stirred up a lot on Grizzlies Twitter. I'll be honest, I'm not looking forward to no John Conchar being our starting three. But, Dave, who do you have in mind that you could see potentially being our starting three? Are you agreeing with Matt, with Luke Kennard possibly filling that role?
Well, when I was making my notes before the show, I wrote David Roddy as a starting three to go with Bane and Marcus Smart. But Roddy's switchable. He can guard. But I think the big issue here is when Ja Morant comes back, we need to settle into a rotation, because we're only going to have about 55 games, whatever the number is, to get everything well-oiled. So there's going to be a Memphis Grizzly team before Ja Morant, and there's going to be a Memphis Grizzly team next season when he comes back. And we can't be shuffling. We can't be moving guys all around, still figuring this out in March. So wherever they go in the direction they go, when Ja comes back, we've got to have a team that's now settled in. And I think Ja, Bane, Smart, I like Adams and Jackson. That's a nice starting five. But what's interesting too, though, I love Luke Kennard, but you got to balance the first team and the second team. And I want Luke Kennard to play a lot. I'm worried if he starts, and then I'm worried about the offensive production from our second unit. And that worry, and again, Zaire Williams, I keep coming back to him. It's such a shame, because he should be the answer. He should be our starting three next year, at least beginning of the season. If we had seen growth in year two, I thought that's why they drafted him at 10. I thought that was the plan. We're going into year three. He'd be the perfect guy to slot in. And maybe he'll have a great training camp, and maybe he will. But with his unreliability at some point, and it makes me nervous. But again, I come back to it. We have to settle in. When Ja Morant comes back, whatever we do at the beginning of the season, We have to be locked in with a set rotation and play together, work out those kinks. Marcus Smart's new. Rose is coming off the bench. We got new guys. So then when we get to the playoffs, we're not still having this conversation.
Yeah. And you said David Roddy. Like I said earlier, I don't view David Roddy as a three after the summer league due to the fact he doesn't have an ability to create on his own. Of course, he has the body. Yes, he will probably be able to attack and be able to have a smaller defender on him. But I don't see David Roddy as a three. And as much as you guys haven't been on the Zaire wave, I still have a lot of hope and I'm still optimistic about the kid. I still believe that he could put in the work and be a great player. I saw him year one, fearless, and he plays some great minutes for us. And I still believe that he can do that. And it's funny that everybody had been mentioning, you know, wings-wise. We got Zaire. We got Laravia. We got Roddy. You talk about Gigi. I think Vince Williams sort of had a pretty decent summer league. A lot of people forget about him. He got injured, and his impact was sort of missed because he was the best team defender out there on our summer league team. And right now the wing position is just so much up in the air that he actually really can battle for a spot, not necessarily starting, but he could potentially, you know, Jenkins could see him, throw minutes at him one game, because right now it's just so much uncertainty about who is going to be this starting wing. I understand that Luke Kennard will benefit a lot if he probably – there's somebody that's been playing in the league a while. Jenkins can see him and run sets for him if he does start. But I agree with you, Dave. I want somebody that's going to be able to come off the bench, and you can give us a quick 10 to 15 points. And that's Luke Kennard. If you start him, guess what? We don't have nobody else. And we don't know how great Derrick Rose is going to be because he really hasn't played. He didn't play all last year. So – it's more of like, I feel like this training camp is going to phase out. Like, who is going to be that starting, you know, small forward for the Grizzlies? Do you agree with that, Matt? That there is going to be like an ongoing battle, like a manslaught to who's going to be the survival of the fittest of the small forward?
Yeah, cage match in Dave terms. That's what he would call it. It's a Royal Rumble, right, Dave? I think it's an ongoing discussion for sure. I don't think anybody's like acquitted themselves as the favorite to be the starting three. But if you think that Contrar is not like very possibly going to be starting day one, I think that Jenkins in this time with the Grizzlies, when there is so much uncertainty, he was going to turn to a guy that he has trusted, that he has played before, that has been around this organization for a long time. And to me, that makes it seem like John Contrar is the decision that Taylor Jenkins would make. I think Luke Kennard raises your ceiling the best. But at the end of the day, none of these guys are the best option, right? Like, the best option is still not on this team. And that's kind of the frustration I have coming out of the free agency period and kind of missing the boat on some of these trades early on as well. Like, they still don't have a great option. None of those guys sound like the starting three of a championship team to me, or even a Western Conference Finals team.
No.
Like, I just think that so much of the NBA the last couple of years is won from that wing position. And obviously, John Morant is such a special player at the guard spot that maybe you can make up for it. But, I mean, even the Warriors needed a lot out of Andrew Wiggins a couple years ago when they won their title in 19. So, I 21, whenever it was. And I just think that three spot is so important. None of these guys are the best option. And it's not even really a question of like, it's not like your best three is injured or anything like that. There's just not that many good players to fill the role on this roster. And that's the frustrating part. And maybe once things kind of settle down, maybe once Ja Morant's back on the team and maybe this team is headed in the right direction, maybe then they finally make this trade that me and Dave and Xavier too have all been talking about for a while, where they push their chips in the middle. But I think there's just so much uncertainty they didn't want to do it this offseason and acclimate one more new guy. And that's kind of frustrating because they're left with no good options at the three spot, in my opinion.
Are we going to get anything from Josh Christopher? What do you guys know about him? I mean, I've seen some highlights. It looks like he can get above the rim. You know, he's an athletic kid, but are we expecting him to even be on the roster?
That's another thing we do have to talk about. With right now the roster is filled with 17 players, and of course you only can go into the season with 15 players. A lot of people, Josh Christopher, I feel like he still has a lot of upside with him, but at the same time, this is a Grizzlies team that wants to win right now, and we can't have the time to, we already have enough players right now that we got to develop on our own. Josh Christopher, yes, he is somebody that can be a spark off the bench. I'm a huge Josh Christopher fan. Shoot, in my opinion, I would take Josh Christopher over John Conchard, but this is a whole totally different front office. They like, especially with Taylor Jenkins, like you were saying, Matt, he likes experience, people that he can rely on, and John Conchard is one of those guys. If you really think about it, he really is one of the last few people that's been with this team since almost 2019, you know, like the original team when Ja Morant came in. So I don't know if we're gonna keep Josh Christopher or not. I mean, we got up to training camp. It's a lot to, you know, weave out the kinks and see who we can keep in and if he's gonna make the actual team or not. But I would love to see him on our team, put it as that. But I do want to mention one last thing, though. It seems like the Grizzlies has been chasing a small four since we traded away Rudy Gay, man.
It's
going on 10-plus years now. Okay, head into our last segment. We're going to talk about what is our upcoming team that we really are looking for? Who is going to be our sleeper team this upcoming season? So a few seasons ago, you could say that the Memphis Grizzlies were the new hottest young team in the NBA. As each season, a new younger team grows and become better, and they make their scene upon the NBA. Dave, is there any young sleeper team? Is there any team that you have caught in your eye as your sleeper team coming into next season?
Yeah, you know, so we don't want to look. I mean, Denver's great, right? And we know Boston's going to be good. And the discussion here isn't who are going to be the best teams in the league. The discussion, as I see it, is what teams are going to make a big leap from last year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wrote down three. It's funny you mentioned the young part of it. I think Oklahoma City is going to be very competitive. I liked what I saw from Chet Holmgren in the summer league, just his health, the way he was moving. They've got a boatload of talent. And I really like that Oklahoma City team. And SGA gives them a lot of leadership and a lot of steady guidance there at the point guard position. They're a very talented team. I wouldn't be shocked if they were floating around that 7 or 8 seed in the West. I think Milwaukee is going to be very good. And maybe that's super obvious, but they did a nice job to re-sign their guys. They're going to go another run here with Giannis. And I think with health, they're going to be really, really good. We kind of forget about the Bucks a little bit in some of the elite of the NBA. But here's my official answer, and I think I nailed it. I think it's the Dallas Mavericks. I think Luka's going to have a monster season. He's still one of the best players in the world. They got Kyrie locked up for 3 years. Let's cross our fingers that he can at least, you know, be a viable star for them and not distract the team. I like what they did in the draft. I like what they've done in free agency. They have some talent. I think the Dallas Mavericks, which, 2 years ago were in the Western Conference Finals. They fell off last year. I think the Mavericks are going to be much, much, much improved this coming season. They're my official answer. And I'm telling you this. I'm going to have them in my top four when we do our college football playoff rankings at some point during the next season. I expect a big season.
Interesting, Dallas Mavericks right off the rip. I mean, I see the Mavericks. I mean, I know they was going to be – I have them in, like, the playoff contention, but as far as, you know, it's a big, big jump, I don't know.
But I like Grant Williams. I think that I don't like him on Memphis, but I think that was a good signing for them. I thought the Seth Curry signing is good. Oh, yeah, I thought the two guys that they got in the draft are give them some size inside. And I think if Luka's, you see these videos, he's shredded now, you know. Everyone's posted. Don't you love those, by the way, those off-season shredded workout videos? Yeah, those are fun.
Everybody gets hyped about it, thinking that they're going to be so much better. But I don't know, to each his own. Dallas. Now, who you got as your sleeper team this upcoming season?
Yeah, I'm trying to think in terms of the young teams. The Jazz, like you said, with George as their draft pick and had some good flashes in the summer league, Keontae George, I like him a lot. But they kind of acquitted themselves pretty well at the start of last season, so I don't know if they really count. Oklahoma City was very competitive throughout last season, so I think they're too good to be on this list too. I look at two of the young teams in the East, and I really am excited for if Cade Cunningham can be healthy. I really like what Detroit has done to kind of build out that team. They have too many bigs, but I really like Jalen Duren, who was a Memphis Tiger and showed that he can be a good NBA player as well. I'm still holding on to hope for James Wiseman as well as a, you know, kind of one of those unicorn 7-foot guys. I love Cade Cunningham, love Jaden Ivey. I love the other Thompson twin, amen. I think that he had some good flashes of athleticism as well in the summer league. But I think my official pick is going to be the Magic. They picked who I thought was the number four best prospect at number six in Anthony Black. And I think that especially on that Magic team where he can be a supersized point guard for them on a team that has needed a point guard for a while, if you have a front line of Anthony Black and Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, that's a really big, switchable, lengthy, you know, defensive front, you know, three guys right there that's going to be really hard to deal with. They're obviously all skilled offensively as well. Wendell Carter anchoring that defense for them, I think they could be good too. And I think the Eastern Conference obviously is a lot easier road to hoe, right, than the West is. So I think that hopefully they can pick off a couple teams here and there. That's definitely my top three teams for my NBA Summer League rankings, though, is going to be Orlando, Detroit, and Utah as well. I think are all young teams that could kind of outperform where I think we all have them because of their youth. But I think they have a ton of talent.
Interesting picks. You know, I agree with you guys in some ways. You know, I'm big. Everybody's talking about OKC. I feel like OKC had that attention at the end of last year, showcasing, and especially in the play-in. But yeah, they're basically, you know, a year away from making that player that jump. And of course, with the Pistons, if they make those moves, I mean, if everybody is healthy. And I feel like they still got too many bigs. Like, why did they sign Isaiah Stewart to them? That amount of money, and you got Marvin Bagley, and you got Jalen Duren, and you got James Wiseman. But I like this, you know, they picked up the Thompson twin. Duren actually has worked on his game. If you watch him in the summer league, he was shooting threes and doing mid-ranges and doing dribble moves. I think the Pistons is going to be on the horizon. But a team that I feel like is going to make a jump, and nobody's talking about, is the Indiana Pacers. Pacers has had a sneaky, sneaky offseason, and I think they're going to be really good. First of all, a lot of people forget, the Pacers, before Halliburton was injured, they was a top six team in the East. So they was going to make the playoffs last year if Halliburton would have stayed healthy. And now you give Halliburton, you lock in Miles Turner. Finally, he's out the trade rumors. You lock in Miles Turner, who's a great shot blocker, rim protector. They bring in Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin, I feel like, still has so much untapped potential. You know how Tibbs is. He don't like playing younger guys. Obi Toppin is somebody that can run with Halliburton. Halliburton is a playmaker, a pass-first type guy. You know how many lobs that Obi is going to catch from Halliburton that's going to be able to push the pace with Halliburton? And then they bring in the kid from Houston. They draft him, Walker. I'm liking this team right now, man. I'm really feeling like this is going to be a big team that a lot of people is going to forget about, sleep about. You got Rick Carlisle over there. You know, he's a defensive-minded coach. He's sort of non-nonsense. But I'm really excited about the Pacers, and many people aren't believing in this team. They don't know about them. I mean, Halliburton was an all-star last year. Really, truth be told, Halliburton, you could put him at sort of as a top – 5 to 6 point guard in the league.
And they got rid of Duarte, right? They traded Chris Duarte.
Yeah,
it's kind of a shame. I thought that he had a nice, I mean, where he went to Sacramento, I think.
Yeah.
But Indiana's a great choice. The Pacers are a fun team. I didn't quite understand the Bruce Brown signing 2 years, $45
million. Yeah, I forgot about that. They did bring in Bruce Brown.
Yeah, he's a good culture guy, maybe. If I were him, I mean, I would wanted to know what the money was like from Denver. It was like a perfect situation for him on the Nuggets. I wonder if they didn't offer him a contract. I don't know what the background there is, but I just felt like he was perfect for the Nuggets.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm ready for the season to start. It's a lot of great teams, you know, that's made moves this offseason. And obviously, it's a lot of young teams that's, you know, are cracking at the door, basically saying, like, come on, just give us an opportunity right now. We talk about Oklahoma City, especially Utah. And we always talk about, well, you know, the Grizzlies are still a young team. and maybe it's not their time. But guess what? These younger teams, like, they're ready and they're hungry. So the Grizzlies got to come on and wake up.
Are we going to watch the Rockets, guys? I mean, they might be a league pass, all-star team to watch. The Rockets are all – it should be a fun team to watch. And then you throw in Dylan Brooks.
I don't know about the Rockets, man. It's interesting. Of course, you bring in Ime. Hopefully, he brings some structure in. But last year and the year before that, we just saw a bunch of isolation. Hopefully, they can come up with a better type of offense.
I think they'll be a fun team to read about on Twitter, not to watch on TV. That's how I'm gonna. That's how I'm gonna consume Houston Rockets basketball this year.
Yeah. Well, guys, that wraps up today's episode of the Core 4 podcast. We appreciate everyone listening or watching this episode today. All right, Matt, where can the people find you on your socials?
Yeah, at Matt H. Gill on Twitter.
Okay. Dave, where can they find you on your socials?
Just Twitter, at DLB19338, and great being with you guys today, talking about the Grizzlies during the summertime. A lot of fun.
You can find me on social media on Twitter at Zaytime Takes, as well on YouTube at Zaytime Takes. I'm posting a little bit more content on there. And then you can find me at TikTok at _XZAY.
Stolen by Morant. Hammer. Nail. Coffin. This baby.